Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Chris Evans here. A big thank you for downloading our Virgin Radio podcast, coming up on this week's edition of The Best of the Breakfast Show with Sky. Sir Trevor McDonald discusses his new book, An Improbable Life. Anton Dubek chats his new novel and tells us about how he wants to go all the way in this year's Strictly. Regina King tells us all about the brand new HBO original show for Sky, Watchmen. Plus, the brand new host of Sky News Breakfast, Kay Burley, gives us a glimpse behind the scenes of Burley at Breakfast. Plus, loads more great guests. Enjoy, my friends, enjoy.
From staring Saddam Hussein in the eye to being on a first name basis with Nelson Mandela, our next guest has stories worth telling and certainly worth listening to. His autobiography, An Improbable Life, is out now, and here to tell us all about it is the king of current affairs himself, the broadcasting legend that is Sir Trevor McDonald.
Good morning, Sir Trevor.
Thank you very much. What a nice introduction.
I've just got to do this. Hang on a second.
News at 10 with Trevor McDonald.
I've heard that before.
How good is that? Come on. When you hear that now, how does it make you feel?
It still has, there's still a frisson.
I bet there is.
Yeah. After so long, I don't think you ever lose that feeling of having heard that music.
How many News at 10s?
I countless.
Thousands?
Yeah, thousands. And for many, many, many years. Perhaps too long.
No way. Never too long. Yeah. What was your first one like?
I remember it as being terribly nervous. I've always tended to be nervous. The fact that, you know, you're sitting there and people keep telling you about all the number of people who are listening or watching, and it frightens the hell out of you.
And back in the day, there were tens of millions, weren't there?
Yeah. Okay. Well, I mustn't... exaggerate this. I don't think there were ever tens of millions, but
well, there were over 10 million. Yeah.
But I mean, there were many, many people watching. We used to top the ratings. So yeah, and you were never, you were always conscious of that fact that there were people out there watching.
Well, happy 80th.
Thank you,
Trevor McDonald's An Improbable Life. Trevor, this book is a great book. It's a real page turner.
What a nice thing to say.
It's a real page turner, but. You've done so much, right? We want another 9, please, of these books. But you have graces with all the highlights, haven't you? You've not messed around here at all.
No, and I've been very, very, very fortunate. I got the chance to do so many of those things. And you know that in this business, there's not a real kind of career structure. So if you get a chance to do all these things, you hit the jackpot. In many cases, you know, I look back and I think I was very, very lucky to do all these things.
Okay, so Trinidad and Tobago's loss was our gain. So thank you for that. Trinidad and Tobago. BBC, first of all.
Yeah, okay, at Bush House.
Tell us about that.
Lovely place. You couldn't have a softer landing if you come to London than Bush House. It's so international. You know, you have breakfast with people who come from China. You talk in the afternoon to people who live in Southern Africa. And in the afternoon, you hear all about Eastern Europe in the bar from some other colleagues. It was a wonderful United Nations of a place. And I enjoyed it immensely.
Okay, so you jumped to ITV.
Yeah.
Who wooed you there? Was that a lunch? Was that a game of tennis? What was that?
No, I applied and they invited me for an interview and offered me a job. And I said, I need to think about it because I was surprised. I thought this process would take a bit longer. And I think I'd gone in there because I used to boast to my friends at BBC Bush House that I was slightly better than they were because I had done some television in Trinidad. And they kept going on with me, if you think you're so good, well, there's a news place called ITN. Why don't you go and see whether you could get a job there? And when I came back and said I'd been offered one, they said, when are you leaving? And I said, well, I asked for time to think about it. And they said, silly man,
too cool
pick up the phone and call them now. And so after a few days,
so
to save face, I did. And it began, you know, many, many happy years at ITN.
Now, you know, we watch you for years on the telly, but your radio voice, it's just sitting here now, even though I can see you, because I've got my headphones on, it's so rich and it's so deep. I almost wish you were on the radio more. And you're a big fan of radio. Tell us about your...
No, well, I think I started out in radio, yeah. And I've always thought there is an immediacy to radio. And I learned that. What it gave me was, you know, so beneficial for my later life, because when I went to Radio Trinidad, they said you must learn to do everything. So I read the news, I played records. I would never call myself, I was never a disc jockey. I think that was a little too high a category for me. But I broadcast, I did cricket commentaries, I did football commentaries, I did racing, I did water polo. In the racing commentaries, which I don't think I was ever very, very good at. But one day somebody said, there's a young guy from Barbados who would love to come and see you guys do this racing. And he turned up. He, I think he was about 16. Michael Stout. Sir Michael Stout. Wow. So I met him when he was 16. And now he runs a huge slice of British racing at Newmarket. So that was, it's a good memory. But the point was, you were made to have a go at everything.
Yeah.
And one of the things I did is I went to the airport to meet VIPs, people coming in. And so, Sam Cooke, Adlai Stevenson, the Platters.
So I'm saying we need another 9 books is what we need.
So,
it was all good. And you love the immediacy of radio as well, don't you?
Yes, absolutely.
Would you come back on the radio at all on a part-time basis, or would you do that? Would you, if somebody offered you a job?
It's a job offer. Yes.
Would you or not? Would you consider it once a week or something like that?
Listen, I'll take it under consideration.
Well, seriously?
Yeah. I've always loved radio. And I listen to radio quite a lot.
It's time you came back, Trevor. just for... What do you do at the weekends? You busy at weekends?
I'll get a recommendation from you.
You don't need one from me.
Yeah.
Trevor, thanks for coming in.
Thank you very much for having me.
It's a real joy to see you. And you're on such top form. You look so well. You sound so well. Trevor MacDonald, An Improbable Life, the autobiography, it is out now. And there is no better read this Christmas for anyone than this book.
The best of the Chris Evans Breakfast Show with Sky on Virgin Radio.
Our next guest has partnered some of the finest dancers on earth, including Anne Widdecombe. His new novel, Moonlight Over Mayfair, is out now. So without further ado, please welcome a man that could go toe-to-toe with any writer and pasa doble them off the page. It's Sunday Times best-selling author, Anton Dubek.
Morning, Anton.
Oh, isn't he a little dreamboat? Look at him. Gorgeous as well.
Anton.
He's got a little stubbly thing that some people can and most people can't.
Yeah.
He definitely can.
Well, we think he's forever das boot, is our Dave.
Beauty. All right.
Anton Dubek, look, we have another proper book here.
Isn't it?
This is your second proper book.
I know, I'm so pleased.
You're in danger of writing more books than most people have read. Seriously. Right, so here we go again. Amazing front cover. Look at that for a front cover, everyone.
It's tempting.
Obviously not if you're listening to the radio. I'm just talking to my co-workers here. Anton Dubek, the Sunday Times bestselling author, Moonlight Over Mayfair. Does it have any of the last lot in it?
Well, it does. It has a few of them. The thing with the second book is, what do you do with it? I mean, it's like the first and second album thing. You get the first, and that's the story that's been milling around in my head. That was the first book. The second book was, let's do another one. Okay, brilliant. Very excited about this. What should we do? I didn't give it that much thought. So, once you think about it and you go, right, actually, let's continue the story because this is a lovely story. I'm really happy with this. And then you have to identify who you're going to keep, who you're going to kill off, and who are you going to introduce? But it wasn't until I sort of established in my own mind that the hotel was the star of the piece and not maybe Raymond or Nancy or Helene or one of these sort of main characters that run through the book. So once the hotel became the star, then the world's your oyster. Now I can do what I have.
See,
anybody
that's
in
the
it.
Situation. The hotel is a location. It's a situation which lends itself to a TV show. It's obviously where you're going with this. Okay, so it's going to be a big blockbusting Netflix. What are you talking, Netflix? Amazon Sky Original?
Yes, please.
In period. Yeah, where,
absolutely.
Where, have we moved on a little bit?
Well, we're above, I think, 6 months after the end of the last
book, 37.
Going into 1938, sort of mid-1938. So we've got one more sort of year before the Second World War
begins.
War looms. And that's the sort of thing that over or hangs over the whole of the thing, because everybody knows it's coming.
Let's talk Strictly now. Now, Anton, it's been a while since you made it past the first minutes of Strictly with your partner. Never down to you, has to be said.
Thank you, very best. Well, this is a very exciting year, isn't it? We're doing steps and everything. Emma is... I've had no compunction to pick
Emma Barnett. Let's tell everybody. Emma Barnett is your partner this year.
Well, Emma Barton.
Sorry, Barton, sorry.
Who does have a lovely Barnett. She's really super to spend time with in the studio because she really does love the dancing. And she's lovely to dance with. We were doing tango yesterday, and I'll see her again today and we'll do some more. And she's got a lovely feel about her when she's doing ballroom. It's really lovely from my perspective because I sort of talk to her like a proper dancer as opposed to sort of a sort of student beginner.
She's
doing tremendously well, and it's really brilliant. And she tries everything. She wants to have a, you know, I'm not feeling like I'm making it a bit easy or I won't do that. In my mind, I'm thinking, oh, I won't do that because she probably won't be. I'm doing everything with her and trying everything with her. And I mean, Viennese Waltz a couple of weeks ago was lovely because that was a new thing. We had quite a strong story going through there, and there was quite a lot of sort of role play, and she was wonderful at that. Then last week we did the Paso Doble, again quite dramatic. His massive backbend at the beginning, it was such a brilliant opening to the dance. But all of these things are only possible because of Emma, really, because I tried this stuff out with her, and if it doesn't work, we don't do it. But if it works, it's wonderfully exciting for me.
There's a chance, at least there's a chance of something happening.
Well, something a bit more dramatic and a bit more, you know, fun.
So has Kevin been on saying, you know, how do you feel your time?
Well, he asked. He said, if you need anything, you let me know. And I said, well, I would do, Kev, but... But I'm doing all right.
Roles reversed this year. Roles reversed. How far do you think you can get?
Do you know?
Realistically.
Honestly, I think she can go all the way. But I do because I think she's amazing. I think she's tremendous.
But can you go all the way?
I'll take my inhaler and I'll be fine. I'll have a lie down in the afternoons.
Kevin's on standby. All right. And before you go, and by the way, it's so nice to see you, Anton.
It's so lovely to see you.
Always nice to see you. It's really good to see you. It never changes, does he?
No, it's
never changes. It's quite annoying in that sense. But how are the twins?
Remarkable.
How old are they now?
Just over 2.5.
All
and
right.
We're talking more now every time, every day. You get a little bit more. And then doing this thing where they're coming out with the funniest, you know, hello, what you've been listening to. And when you say to your wife, you go, that's definitely you. You definitely said that. That wasn't me. It's the most wonderful, brilliant thing. And they're really together. And it's beautiful. And I love every second of it. If I was younger and wealthier, I'd have 50. I'd have hundreds of them.
Yeah,
I love it.
For the first time ever, we were away from all our four kids as a couple this weekend. And when we came back to a house of four kids who were waiting for us, we didn't get one welcome or two or three. We got four different welcomes, four goodness. Different faces, four different smiles. It was amazing.
It's gorgeous.
Right, Anton Dubek, the reason he's in really is the Sunday Times bestselling author, Moonlight of a Mayfair. It's his second book, Prepare to be Swept Off Your Feet, from the first page to the last. Thank you, Anton.
Oh, thank you. You're beautiful.
You are more than beautiful.
The best of the Chris Evans Breakfast Show with Sky on Virgin Radio.
From taking our breath away in the stunning If Beale Street Could Talk to using a cow to shield herself from a hail of bullets in the new Sky Atlantic series Watchmen, next guest is the superhero that can do it all. Please welcome the Oscar-winning tour de force that makes any show sing. It's Regina King.
Good morning.
Hi.
Good morning.
Good morning, y'all.
Good morning, Regina.
I need Dave just like to introduce me just in the morning. When I get up.
To the mirror, I will. Yeah. All right, now, last time you came on, you were an Oscar nominee.
Yes.
She is now an Oscar winner, everybody! Woo! Where'd you keep your Oscar?
I keep my Oscar in, like, my office library.
Right.
It, like, sits behind me. All the books are in front of me. All the awards
are
behind
home.
Me. In my home,
okay.
Yeah.
And do people, when people come and visit you, do they ask respectfully, can I have a photograph? Do they want to
yes.
hold it?
Yes.
What happens when you have an Oscar?
Well, you know what is, like, I forget about it. You know, it's done. I mean, I'm on to the next thing. Not that it's not an amazing thing to have, but it's when people come over and they go, where is it? And sometimes I'm not expecting it, and I'm like, where is what? And I'm like, oh, yeah, it's up there. And people want to take a picture. I think it's sweet.
Oh, it's more than sweet. Yeah. It's amazing is what it is. Right, so we're talking about Watchmen, episode 2, 9 p.m. Monday, 20th of October, Sky Atlantic. Episode 1 has just aired, an HBO production. Now, you were already filming this around Academy Award time, weren't you?
Yeah, when I came here before, I left set on Thursday night, got on the plane from Atlanta to come here, and yeah, I would literally had just finished shooting a scene when I came to see you guys
now,
last time.
It hits you in between the eyes from the first frame to the last. Tulsa, 1921. You tell us about that.
Well, that's our entry point into the world that we're in, the universe, that the alternate history. But that particular piece of the storytelling is an actual depiction of something that happened in America, in Tulsa.
Which is A, horrible, B, terrifying.
Yeah, yeah. And I mean, and what makes it even more horrible is that there were other events like that that took place around
all
that time
over,
and all over, you know, southern parts of the country.
That first 5 minutes is just like,
it's mind-blowing.
Are you serious?
Yeah. Well, and, you know, I guess, you know, when you look at, while that was terrible, it was an education for a lot of people. So many people, black people as well, were not aware that this and other acts of violence like this took place that just decimated a whole, you know, bloodline. Yeah.
Okay, all right. Working with Don Johnson, he was very supportive of you.
Oh my God!
I mean, not that we need support, but it's never harmful, is it? Support?
No, we do need support, and I think that's what I think. People, we forget that even when you're looking at people who are very successful, we all still need support. You never not need support.
Yeah.
Don, we just had amazing conversations, and he just would put so many little jewels that he would just sit there for me to take in. Going on this journey with this Oscar campaign and all of that was going on while we were shooting.
Yeah, of course it was.
He talked me through a lot of things, and you know, I would hit him up through text like, "What do you think? I'm so tired. Do you think I should do this?" And sometimes he'd be like, "Yeah, give yourself a break." And sometimes he'd be like, "Yeah, you might want to push yourself to go on and make that happen." But he was a great voice throughout all of it, and I just love that guy.
It's funny because Michael Caine tells the story of working with John Huston, and John Huston and he he and Sean Connery made a film with John Huston, who was his directing hero. And he said, you know, Huston considered him the great actor, and he considered Connery the great star. Mm. You know, and Michael Caine was a fantastic star, or is a fantastic star, and Sean Connery was a fantastic actor. But there was a little, you know, difference between the two. And of course, Don Johnson still is. It doesn't get any bigger than, it did in the 80s. It was, Miami Vice was massive, wasn't it?
Yes.
Massive.
I mean, like, people still call him Crockett.
Yeah, yeah.
You know?
Crockett and Tubbs.
Yeah.
Right. Well, listen, well done. Congratulations. You say look out for episode 6, particularly, don't you?
Yeah, but you need, I really feel like you appreciate episode 6 even more. You have to go through 1 through 5 because there are going to be a lot of things set up 1 through 5 that 6, it just pays off so tremendously.
May I have your permission to watch episode 1 again?
Oh, I think you should.
I explained the circumstances I watched in last night.
Yeah, yeah. But you know what? You know what, Chris? I had to watch episode 1 again, and I caught things that I missed the first time around.
It's
and
worth
I read
it,
the script
it?
And shot it.
It's definitely worth it. All right. It's beautiful to see you again.
So good to see you.
What else is going on when you get back to L.A. on Friday?
When I get back to L.A. on Friday, more promoting, and I'm totally in prep on my theatrical directorial film debut.
Wow.
Yeah. pretty exciting.
Pretty exciting?
Pretty exciting.
Doesn't get any better?
Man.
If it does, I don't want it.
Yeah.
All right. Thank you, Regina.
Thank you.
Awesome. Regina King, Watchmen, episode one to watch on Sky Atlantic now. Episode two airs linearly. They're every Monday on Sky Atlantic, and they're at 9 p.m. episode two this coming Monday. Excellent work.
The best of the Chris Evans Breakfast Show with Sky on Virgin Radio.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
We've heard from three guests already, but there's loads more still to come. Ross Noble takes us through his wild and wacky new stand-up tour, Humanoid. David Baddiel tells us about his new children's book, The Taylor Turbo Chaser. John Culshaw transforms into Bojo for the audiobook, The Secret Diary of Alexander Boris Pfeffel Johnson, aged 13 and a quarter. And Gillian Bell discusses her new movie, Britney Runs a Marathon. All that and more, but first, Dapper Dave. Who's next?
If you like your cornflakes with a dash of hard-hitting current affairs, then look no further. She takes no prisoners as the host of the brand new Burley at Breakfast Monday to Thursday on Sky News, and here to tell us all how it's put together, please welcome a self-confessed menopausal mountaineer. It's Kay Burley!
Morning, Kay!
I have to say the temperature in here is not helping my menopause.
No, I know. Well, it's not your menopause that's causing it, is it?
May well be, actually. May well
could,
be.
Could be our joint menopause that's causing it. My menopause. So you finally made, you've moved back to breakfast, to Sky News Breakfast.
Third time, actually.
Okay, so from the afternoons, okay, why not, of course, but why particularly now?
Well, for the very reasons that we've just been talking about, there is no better time to be talking about politics than at the moment. So we've moved our studio, not only moved to breakfast again, but also moved our studio to Westminster. Yep. And I put the politician's chair within about 4 or 5 inches of me so I can see the whites of their eyes.
They can see the whites of yours.
Yes, indeed. And they try and wriggle off the hook, and generally I don't let them.
It's so funny because they just got rid of John Humphreys. They just seen the back of him on the Today Show. They think, finally we can digest our cornflakes again. And then you pitch up all of a sudden, you think, oh no, Burley's back at breakfast. What the heck is going on here?
Yeah, well, there we go. But it's my job to hold their feet to the fire so that all these lovely people who were in the studio with us this morning can, you know, cut through all the nonsense that politicians come out with and think, oh, that's what they're saying.
No, I know. And it's compelling viewing, isn't it? It's its own drama at the moment. It's beyond a soap opera because it's better than that. You know, it's like a Sky original. It's a big, what do they call it? A maxi series, isn't it? It's a big box set that we're all hooked on and we can't get enough
of. Yeah.
Unfortunately, for the wrong reasons.
Well, yeah. I mean, I had a Labour politician on during the week, bless his cotton socks, and I said to him, you're not going to go to the polls because, you know, the polls said last time that you were going to lose. And he said, yeah, they said that last time. I said, yeah, but you did. And it was like,
I forgot about that. Oh, actually, so much has happened since, Kay. Sorry. Yeah. I only just ordered my cappuccino, didn't you? Yeah. So it's all going under. It couldn't be more exciting. Now, Adam Bolton follows you, right? And Adam Bolton is described as Sky's political editor at large.
Yes.
What does the at large bit mean? And he's always described.
Have you seen him? I'm kidding, Adam, if you're listening. I am kidding. But it means, well, our political editor is Beth Rigby. Right. And Adam has been doing that.
I suppose emeritus would be another way of putting it.
Yeah.
All right. Okay. All good. Casey, ask Kay anything you like. The off the record stuff.
Yeah. Right?
How does that come to you, the off the record?
Well, I go for lunch or dinner with politicians and they tell me stuff. Although number 10 will not talk to me. I don't know why that is.
At the moment.
Why do you think that is?
How long is that? Is that since Boris or Theresa May?
Since Boris. Before Boris was elected and we tried to, Boris Johnson, I should say. Everybody calls him Boris. Let's not just, you know, call him by his first name. Boris Johnson.
His first name is Alexander.
I know.
Sandy, you could call him Sandy.
Yeah, well, my little boy's called Alexander, as you know. We had him and we had Jeremy Hunt and we wanted to do a head-to-head for an hour with them both. And he bottled it.
Really?
Yeah, okay. So I think his first name is Bottler Johnson rather than Alexander.
There you go.
Yeah,
all
come
right.
on, Prime Minister,
well,
you think you're hard enough. Come on.
No fun for Bojo Joe this election's not going to happen, is it? It's hot air, it's pie in the sky, it's HR puff and stuff. Yeah. Okay, all right, moving on. For the third incarnation of Kay Burley at breakfast on your Sky News channel, how is it third time around, Kay?
It's still very early. I remember when we used to do breakfast together a lot, or at the same time a long time ago, and used to say, Kay Burley, who gets up early? And I'm doing it for the third time, and at the moment I'm getting up at 4, and I'm hoping to push it to 7 minutes past 4 in the fullness of time.
Ooh. And that 7 minutes makes such an important difference. Of course, in my Zen book, which I was reading last night in the pub on my own with a pint, because the kids are away, the ankle bites are away with mum, and I'll join them later. Zen says you should actually get up earlier, not later, and that will be better for you. So no matter how early you have to get up 15 minutes earlier than that, and you will be less tired because you'll feel less frenetic and you'll feel calmer, and actually that will help. And instead of sneaking the 7 minutes in the morning, go to bed 7 minutes earlier at the night time. That's what
I find it difficult to sleep at night at the moment. I don't know whether I'm going to settle into it in the fullness of time, but for now, I'm still not going to sleep till about 11.
So if I really treat my... And I know why that is, because if I really treat myself, right, I'll go to sleep at 11 because I watch the news review on Sky at 7:30. And I bet you watch that as well, don't you? Because you can't not watch that.
Exactly right.
Who's your favourite couple on the news review?
That's a great question. Oh, I have loads. I really like Stig Abel. He's really good,
isn't
he?
He's Mondays, isn't he? Yeah.
Yeah. And I like Andrew Pearce and Kevin Maguire together. Yeah. I think Stan they're
and
really
Waldorf,
good.
They're amazing.
Yeah, they are. They're really... those are just men. So let me think of women. Kate Andrews is great as well.
Yeah, well, Carol Malone is she's on good. With Stig usually, isn't she?
Okay. Is.
All good. Who do you love having on? Who always gives you, you know, great
good
content?
Yes, Michael Heseltine. Okay. Lord Heseltine.
He's brilliant, isn't he? At the moment,
he is.
Him and Ken Clark as well.
Yeah, Ken Clark, elder statesman.
Is it because they always told like it wasn't, regardless of whether you agree with them, they really believe what they say? They really have a belief.
They're committed politicians.
They're committed politicians.
Yeah, they most certainly are. And I like speaking to Harriet Harman as well.
Right.
Mother of the House, because she's been the longest serving MP, female MP.
Is that why it is? I didn't realise. Because Ken Clark is the father of the House. Yeah. It's as simple as that, is it? Okay, did they ever get together?
And then have babies of the House.
No way! Well, hang on a minute. Let's just leave that right there for it. You can tell it's a day off, can't you?
The best of the Chris Evans Breakfast Show with Sky on Virgin Radio.
He's a British comedy legend whose list of talents is seemingly endless. His fantastical new children's book, The Taylor Turbo Chaser, is out now, and here to tell us all about it is the godfather of giggles himself. We're not leaving without a deal. Oh, no, we've got a David Baddiel.
Yay! Thank you very much. Oh, yes.
That was awesome. Far too good for this show.
Hello, Chris.
Good morning, David. How are you?
Oh, I'm extremely exhausted. So I think I always have been when I do your breakfast show.
Well, that's because it's a breakfast show.
Yeah. It involves getting up quite early.
That's the link there, yeah.
That's the thing, yeah. Yeah. Also, I had a play open last night in London, and I had to stay quite late talking to people and directors and stuff, and then thinking about it all night. And then about halfway through the night, I thought, now I'm thinking about doing the Chris Evans breakfast show.
Sorry. Can only apologise. You never have to think about that. You never have to play on your mind.
No, you're right. Actually, I gave it no thought whatsoever.
Brilliant.
You're absolutely
good.
Right.
Thank you for being honest. Yeah. So God's Dice, London Soho Theatre, that was last night. This is a play he's written. So he's got a play opening, he's got a new kids book, he's going on tour, he's got it all going on. How was it?
It was good, actually. It was really good to preview.
God's Dice, what is it about?
It's sort of about... the premise is, what if someone could scientifically prove the existence of God?
Ooh.
So Alan Davis, who's brilliant in it.
Love Alan Davis.
He's really brilliant. He plays a physics lecturer, and one day this young student turns up in his class with equations that seem to prove the existence of God and miracles and that. Trouble for him is he's married to a kind of female Richard Dawkins. He's married to a very prominent atheist.
Right.
So this causes a lot of trouble, and it's funny, and then it's a bit serious, and, you know, it went all right.
All right, so that's God's Dice, previewing until next week.
It's at the Soho Theatre at the moment.
Okay, good. Trolls Not the Doors 2020 tour. Get onto that in a moment or two. 50-odd date tour. You're not messing about, are you? You're tired now. How are you going to be...
I'm 55. What am I doing?
No,
I should be...
No, you're not.
No, yes, no, no one. Absolutely no one. No,
guys,
come on, guys,
No way.
No, look, don't patronise me, guys.
Sorry.
I mean, really.
It's so easy, though.
Yeah,
can we not
easy.
Talk about age, thank you very much.
Well, you're only 32. So.
That's very sweet of you.
But yes, I've chosen this part of my life to work incredibly hard. That seems good.
Well done. So the Taylor Turbo Chase is really why you're on. This is your next kid's book. And now David has sold over 1 million children's books. Well done.
Well done.
So he's quite good at this. How worried does David Walliams need to be?
incredibly. David is sweating in his palace. That's what David is doing. He's saying, oh, God, I must put these gold coins aside to worry about David Baddiel.
He'll just probably have you killed nowadays.
Yeah, he might actually. It's entirely possible.
Okay, so who's Amy?
Amy is an 11-year-old girl, and she's a petrol head. Yep. You're a bit of a petrol head, of course, or used to be.
This the whole carbon neutral thing is playing on my mind at the moment.
Well, she likes electric cars mainly, but she does like cars. She's sort of in that way, she's a young Jeremy Clarkson then.
Yeah.
And she dreams of driving. And it comes from my whole thing with kids, which is that I think I write wish fulfillment books. So my first book, for example, is about a world in which children can choose their own parents. Yeah. It was suggested to me by my son, which has always bothered me as a thing. But nonetheless, it's an idea that I think children want something.
Yes.
And when I was a kid, I used to sit in my dad's car when it was off and pretend to drive. And apparently kids still do that. I've asked kids and they still do that. So I wanted to write a book about a kid who dreams of driving. But then I put a spin on it, which is Amy is disabled. She was actually disabled in a car crash when she was 7. And she's in a wheelchair. And one of the things I did that for is I thought a wheelchair is kind of like a car already.
Yeah, yeah.
And she gets a new electric wheelchair, and then her friend, who's called Raoul, who's kind of a kid inventor, pimps her ride. Can I say that?
Of course you can.
Pimps her ride, pimps her wheelchair ride into a sort of supercar, a mad supercar involving fish tanks and chimneys and all sorts of stuff. And then they drive it to Scotland in a magical road trip. That's really what happens.
I think it's brilliant. Doesn't it sound amazing? Why Scotland?
Well, I'll tell you why Scotland. Not because of any sort of England-Scotland rivalry in me. No Three Lions thing going on there. Yeah, yeah. It's because her dad is a supercar maker, and he's divorced from the family, and he's separate from the family, and he basically has paid for her wheelchair, right? He's paid for her electric wheelchair. Her friend then puts all this stuff on it.
Uh-huh.
Her brother Jack posts a picture of it on social media. The dad is furious.
Uh-huh.
He says, take all that stuff off. I want to see the wheelchair I bought for you. And she's so upset, and then she decides, no, I'm not going to do that. I'm going to go with all my pals. I'm going to drive it to Scotland and show my dad how incredible...
So he's up in Scotland?
He's up in Scotland. He's distant.
Is he running away to Scotland? Has he got a secret lair there or what?
Well, he's designing supercars there.
In Scotland?
In Scotland, it can be done, right? But, well, the real reason is...
Well, the most beautiful roads in the world, of course.
Most beautiful roads in the world, exactly. And you can drive an electric wheelchair with fish tanks there if you want, it turns out. But what has actually happened is, and there are deep little proper novel structures in my book, is that he was driving the car that caused the accident when Amy was disabled.
Gotcha.
And he can't quite deal with it. She can deal with it, but he can't forgive himself. And he's gone to Scotland, separate from the family. And in a way, it's all about the healing journey between his daughter.
Did they go to Loch Ness? Is the monster involved?
You know what? That's a postscript.
Did they go to...
I wish I'd put that
in. Did they go on the A82, which is the best road in Great Britain?
Well... Actually, they go on back roads. Because one of the things I was worried about was, will the publishers let me write a book in which a child drives a jalopy on a motorway?
Right.
I thought, someone will say health and safety. That's a problem. So in the end, they drive on a series of back roads. So you could probably tell me the best back roads from London to Scotland.
No, I couldn't. But I can tell you the A82 is the greatest road. So is it the A303?
Yeah. The A303 is a brilliant road.
Beautiful, but the A82 knocks spots off it.
Does it?
Yeah, it's unbelievable. Yeah, it goes Loch Lomond. You go up from Glasgow, Loch Lomond, Fort William. Stunning Glencoe.
Right.
Off the charts.
Have you done a driving tour?
Yes, I've done it. I did it.
Okay, all right.
On my own.
I don't doubt you. On your own.
I did it on my own,
I'm interested in this on your own life you got at the moment. You're in the pub, I heard you say, reading a Zen book on your own. Are you finding solace in your own company?
No, my wife's gone on holiday a day before me. Simple as that.
Okay. Yeah, but that doesn't mean you go to the pub on your own with a book about Zen.
Why not?
Well, I'm not saying you shouldn't do it.
It was a perfect hour.
Was it?
The most beautiful hour. Yeah.
Did you not get drunk?
I had a pint and a half of bit. It was literally the perfect hour. Pint and a half. I was tempted to have another half, but I thought pint and a half, that'll do me nicely.
The best of the Chris Evans Breakfast Show with Sky on Virgin Radio.
Right, Debbie, we have another brand new guest. Over to you, my friend.
He's been on stage making people laugh since the age of 15 and hasn't looked back. Tickets are on sale now for his world tour, Humanoid, which begins in Salford in April next year. So, without further ado, please welcome stand-up comedy's very own Geordie Juggernaut. It's the mind-bendingly brilliant Ross Noble.
Good morning, Ross. Welcome to the foray. Yeah. How are you, my friend?
I'm very well. There's a lot of people in this room, isn't there?
There is, there's loads.
I was not expecting that. Normally, in a breakfast situation, it'll be a host and not quite the enormous crowd of people.
I know.
And I might be a little bit tired, and I know you're used to this hour, but you do know that there's somebody dressed as the Joker directly behind you.
Well, we've been here before. Is it the Joker or is it Joker now? Because the movie's called Joker, it's not called The Joker. Baker. I pulled the guest up about this a couple of weeks ago. Then he got on my case for getting on his case. And it's only because somebody had got on my case before that for doing
It's the Joker when he becomes the Joker.
Yeah.
But this film is about the guy's descent into madness that then makes he's Joker. And then he becomes the Joker. Right. Spoiler alert, at the end, he becomes the Joker.
Have you seen it?
I have.
Have you seen it, Dave?
I haven't seen it, but I'm still worried about the pronouns there.
Okay.
Because if he's a Joker, yep. that just sounds like something a teacher says to you. Don't be such a Joker.
Yeah.
But he's a sort of failed stand-up comedian.
Right.
I would be very careful when you watch that film.
What?
Because for...
What are you saying?
I'm just saying...
Hang on a minute, Ross. What are you
saying? Where are you going with this, Ross?
You know exactly where I'm going with this. For us, there's a whole different... yeah. There's a whole different thing going on. As a comic,
right.
There's a whole... You know, there's those certain gigs where a lot of people in the audience are watching it just going, this man's terrible, and you're sat there going, yeah, I can see that.
Right, so your new show, Humanoid.
Yes.
What we're talking about. So Humanoid. What does Noid mean? So paranoid, what does Noid mean? Do we know? Does any
looking at me like I know. I don't know what Noid means.
Well, you're the cleverest person here. Etymologically,
person.
What does Noid mean? Do we
it
know?
Would be oid rather than Noid,
would
it?
Would it be oid, paranoid, human?
I'll be perfectly honest with you, Chris. Yep. I haven't fully thought it through. I thought it sounded a bit like humanoid.
Yeah.
And then I thought, well, human sounds a bit like humour.
Yeah.
So I'll tack the two together.
No, I get all that bit.
No, that was my thinking, but unfortunately, nobody gets it, and it sounds like hemorrhoid. So it's the worst title for any show I've done, and yet it's the title that people talk about the most.
Perfect.
So in many ways, it's working
Ta-da!
Out well. Yes.
Okay, so you've only got 36 dates. He's doing 51 dates, David.
Yeah,
but he's always touring. Always. You're like Bob Dylan.
Yeah,
you're on a never-ending tour.
Yeah. And also, they're only the UK dates.
Yay! So,
I've already done 40 dates in Australia, and then I'm going to America, and then I go back to Australia, and then I do the UK tour.
Right.
So actually, that is just a thin sliver.
Okay.
So, so thanks for trying to cause trouble between the two of us.
I wasn't trying to cause trouble between the two of you.
What you've seen here is us fighting it out about dates.
I want to know, right? If your tour, David, let's we have to pay your tour down. No, we'll leave it at 51 because you're UK only and he's like global and beyond, right?
Right.
So if your tour had a fight against his tour, which tour would win? Which is the most...
Well, clearly his tour would win, except in the UK.
From a volume point of view, I'm on about from like what's in it, a character point of view, you know, aggressive, you know, could superpowers.
Right.
Tour against tour.
I think the thing about the tour is that like most people from the outside would look at venue size and would look but I'm saying that chances are I would compare the tours on the quality of the green room rider. And the biscuits in the hotel.
Yeah. Although one thing, if it was a fight, my show, Trolls Not the Dolls, is about hate on social media. So I could just marshal all of that against Ross.
You see?
I could just get all the hatred, which is a lot, I don't know if you've seen it, on the internet against Ross if it was a fight. I wouldn't like to do that normally, but you've posited it should
be a fight. And also, your show is... about something.
Yes.
Whereas mine isn't.
Yeah.
So
I thought about hemorrhoids, not about hemorrhoids.
So you win on
can
that
we,
score.
Ladies and gentlemen, can we give way to Kay Burley, the Right Honourable Kay Burley,
Thank
please.
You. Only because my producer is in the room and he went to Cambridge. He's a very clever boy. Oid, Latin oidus, related to the Greek eidos, meaning form. Thank you very much.
Wow.
So your humour form is what you are?
It's a humour form, which sounds a bit like some sort of ladies' sanitary product, unfortunately.
In your mind, in your ears, it does. Humanoid hits the road in April and May 2020. Now, of course, Seinfeld famously said his show, biggest comedy show in the world, wasn't about anything. In a way, that meant there was space for it to be about everything.
But it was kind of about the human condition, wasn't it? There's a great story about how apparently they pitched it, when they first pitched it, and they said, this is a show about the human condition. And one of the executives went, but can that sustain for several seasons?
I think it might.
It did,
Okay, because they only wrote six, didn't they, in the first, because they had a pilot series. And he and Larry David said, you know, they knew they could write six, but then they found out that it was going to be commissioned and they didn't realise that's right, 23 a year.
Yeah.
Boom.
Nice. Worked out though, didn't it?
Yeah, it did all right. Yeah. Doing all right. Still doing all right.
Sorry, what was the question?
No, there wasn't a question. It was about nothing. That, yeah. that part of the interview was about nothing.
The best of the Chris Evans Breakfast Show with Sky on Virgin Radio.
She's risen through the ranks of improv comedy and Saturday Night Live and is soon to be seen running riot in the new inspirational film Brittany Runs a Marathon, the first movie ever to be shot during the New York Marathon. So please, lace up those shoes, stretch those hammies, and listen to the wonderful Gillian Bell.
Morning, Gillian!
Wow, what an intro!
He's good, isn't he?
And you said every word perfectly?
Well, first time this morning, to be honest. We had a bit of a team lunch yesterday, Gillian.
Oh, you did?
Oh, yeah. We have one every couple of months. And yesterday was audience figures day, and it all went very well. So we were going out anyway. Figures up, we go out. Figures down, we go out. We just go out. We go big early, and we get home early, and there you are. What were you doing yesterday? Could you have joined us?
Oh, goodness. What was I doing yesterday? A lot of interviews. A lot of interviews sitting on a couch in a hotel.
Right.
I would have liked to have gotten outside because I heard it was really lovely outside.
It was lovely.
It was like the one day.
Today is the day for all those junkets in the hotel room, isn't it?
Yeah, yesterday... it is actually very spooky all outside. Right. I like it. It's perfect for Halloween coming up.
So Brittany Runs a Marathon, cinemas Friday 1st of November, available on Amazon Prime from Friday the 22nd of November. All right. So it's sort of based on a true story of a friend of a friend, is that right?
Yes, it. The writer director Paul Downs Clazo wrote it as sort of a love letter to his friend. They have known each other since they were in college. They moved in together in their 20s, and they started having conversations about, you know, how to make their lives better and more unique. And she went out for her first run, and she enjoyed it enough to sort of set a big goal of running the New York City Marathon. Uh-huh. So it's based off of, loosely based off of that.
Right. So method acting comes into play here. How fit did you have to get? Did you really run the marathon?
I ran a lot. I without giving away any spoilers, I ran a little bit of the marathon. Right. And I lost 40 pounds.
Well, actually,
yes,
in real life,
yeah, I lost 29 pounds before we started shooting and 11 pounds during shooting.
So you lost the 29 pounds before you started shooting, but then you had to have it put on again prosthetically every morning for a while.
Yes.
How ironic.
Yes. And three different body suits as we go through the movie, because it's there's a bit of a transformation there.
OK, so this transformation for now we know for you and your character. So did the prosthetic part of the day, did that get less and less as the movie went on? Was it 4 hours to start with, then three, then two, then?
You would think, but we shot so out of order that some mornings I would just have it on for an hour or 4 hours. So 14 of the 28 shooting days I had it on.
Don't you hate it when that happens?
It was crazy. Well, you're in the makeup chair for 3 hours just getting it put on.
You have to get on with your makeup people, don't you? You have
oh,
to
yeah.
get on with your wardrobe people.
Oh, yeah. And they were all wonderful. We had a great time.
You spend more time with those guys than your family in the end.
Yeah, exactly.
Right. So Tobey Maguire is involved in this. So how did he get involved in this film?
He produced it. He found Paul. Paul is a playwright, and he wrote a play called Really, Really, and went and saw the play and loved Paul's work. And they sat down together, and he said, you know, what do you want to make? Because I want to work with you. And he said, I want to write a story about my best friend who was sort of always fine being the butt of a joke and then just started pursuing a goal earnestly. And that was running for the first time in her life, and he thought there was something interesting in that.
So what's it like to make a movie, you know, as the New York Marathon is going on? How'd you get permission, and then there's 50,000 other people who are basically extras, I suppose, aren't they?
And which was wonderful, because, you know, it really comes to life that being able to be a part of the marathon was such an extraordinary experience, and being around 50,000 people who have a shared goal is just unreal.
It's so
it's
cool,
palpable.
Isn't it? I know, that's why we do it, because, you know, that's why we get involved in this. We have our own running festival, but you could be our guest of honor at our running festival.
Oh, I love it. I love it.
People coming, like, it's like a rock festival, but it's for running.
Oh, wow.
And it's really cool. And like the people are the show. That's the difference, isn't it, when you go to a marathon? So the participants,
yes.
You know, you go to a pop concert, you're not on stage.
Right.
But if you're in the marathon, you are the show.
This is it. And there's people out there cheering for you. That's got to feel incredible.
It does feel incredible. And it gets you by, you know. Did you get any of the gloves? Because we bought some gloves that had the five bridge crossings on them.
Oh, that's very cool.
In order, just in case you forgot where you were.
Oh, that's so funny. No, well, we didn't get anything like that.
Did you go to the start? Did you go to the start?
Yeah, we were at the starting line.
Yeah.
Is that what you're talking about?
Yeah, the starting line.
Yeah, we did that, like, I think we shot that four or five times, but it was incredible just being in the corral, and and feeling that energy of everyone's about to take off and go for this big thing. And it was so funny because I think a lot of people left us alone because they thought maybe we were a documentary.
Yeah.
But there were some people that saw that I was struggling while I was running.
You must have been recognized though, loads, mustn't you?
No, I mean, people were so in their own heads about actually, like what they were doing. Yeah. And but it was really cool to see that when I was struggling in the movie, people were actually helping me. So we had to edit that part out. But it was actually, it was so beautiful, though. We were all weeping because here's these people that are running and they're trying to make their times and they're stopping to help me.
I know.
Which I didn't have the heart to tell them I'm an actress and none of this is real.
So it's quite a neat time to bring it out as well, around the marathon. I mean, it makes sense. Of course it does.
Yeah, it makes a lot of sense. Right. We're hoping people see it and relate or get inspired.
We are the running show.
This is it.
This is what
I
we
know.
Do.
I can't believe how many marathons everybody's done.
Well, congratulations. Give my love to Tobey Maguire. Say you met a bloke that was in the same house in once.
I will. I'm sure he'll remember.
It was at Oriel. Do you know where Oriel is?
Oriel.
The up Doheny turn right and the birds, part of the birds.
Okay.
Blue Jay Way, all that
okay.
area.
Okay, I'll let him know.
Right, and what are you doing next?
I'm in Bill and Ted's Face the Music,
nice.
Which is very exciting. And I'm on a show called Bless the Hearts that's on after The Simpsons. It's
all
a
right.
cartoon.
The best of the Chris Evans Breakfast Show with Sky on Virgin Radio.
Barack Obama and David Bowie via Ozzy Osbourne and Billy Connolly. Our next guest could really take us anywhere. However, he is Boris Johnson for the new audiobook, The Unofficial Secret Diary of Boris Johnson, aged 13 and a quarter. With that in mind, it's time to welcome a man that always leaves a lasting impression. It's the quite brilliant John Coulshaw.
Thank you very much. Oh. Good morning, John.
Thank you for that wonderful introduction.
Yeah.
I am very flattered.
Well done, David. Dave. Just about got through there, didn't you?
Yeah.
Big team lunch yesterday, John. Big team lunch. A few casualties this morning. Of fragility around the show, including myself, has to be said. All right, The Unofficial Secret Diary of Boris Johnson by Lucien Young. Is there anything that he wrote when he was a kid in this or not? Or is it all made up?
It feels as though it could be. that personality of Boris that we know today.
Give us, for example, what are you talking about?
Well, I think what we the hesitation is there straight away. The occasional spouting of Latin, nil satis nisi optimum, that is all there. But the issues are around control of the tuck shop. It's around building his personality and using bluff and humour so it is to his advantage.
You can all have a go, can't you? Issues, not tissues. Love it. Vassos was saying to you just off air, Vassos was saying to John off air, that Vassos, you've done a couple of audiobooks now, haven't you? You did my last one, thank
I did,
you.
I did one of yours.
But you didn't try and do an impression of me though, did you?
No, and I did both of mine.
Right.
But all in my normal voice.
Yep.
But John, you did an entire book in an impression of Boris Johnson.
Yes.
How was that?
Surprisingly, the tone and style of Boris helps because he's so kind of imprecise. It doesn't matter if you hesitate a bit, you can just let it flow. The more pauses, the better. So it's actually quite helpful, his style of delivery.
Well, it's helpful to him as well, isn't it? Because famously, Harold Wilson, he used to have a... The reason he smoked a pipe on the telly, because you're allowed to smoke a pipe on the telly then. Well, first of all, he smoked cigars in private, but he smoked a pipe because it was more working class. And it was all very Brexity, all very Brexiteery, all that kind of stuff. But he smoked a pipe because it gave him time to think. So somebody would ask him a really tough question, and he'd have the pipe in his hand, and then if he really needed another beat, just before he answered the question, so they'd ask him a really tough question, Prime Minister this, Prime Minister that, and he'd go, well, and he'd have a little puff on his pipe and he'd give him that second to sort of dodge a Kay Burley-esque exocet of a question, you know what I mean?
Isn't that a clever, clever thing? And not only the thinking time, it also gave him character, gave him that bit of likability, a great hook for Mike Yarwood at the time.
Can you do Wilson?
There's a pound in your pocket, and yes, I remember how Mike Yarwood did it on the side. Parkinson was there, and he was interviewing Harold Wilson, and Harold was at the side of Mike Yarwood, and they were both sort of Harold Wilsoning together. It was
because Tony Benn had a pipe as well. I wonder if that's the reason why.
Yes, I think he did. I don't know. I think perhaps Tony Benn did it more genuinely.
You're Billy Connolly, right?
Oh yes.
And you're Johnny Vegas.
Yes.
Don't you think that they're just an accent away from each other? Because it's very Johnny's very he's very very throaty like that, isn't he?
Yes.
And Billy's the same but different. Can you slide from one to the other?
Yes. Now let's just think about that. So you've got
Johnny Vegas with that style there, with that comedic bewilderment and everything that's mad in the world. And if you take that rasp and move the accent away from St. Helens and maybe bring that Glaswegian lilt.
Yes! Come on!
Just retune that in that way.
Oh!
I love how reflective Billy is now. You know, that sense of great wisdom that comes through. I might... This is one voice I might just use permanently, you know.
Well, he's done all right with it, hasn't he? Why don't you say goodbye, John? It's lovely to have you here, by the way, as always, by reading his first Dear Diary excerpt.
Oh, there we are. Let's have a look.
His first entry.
Eton College, Berkshire, Friday, the 9th of September. Dear Diary, salutations, greetings, howdy, and an abundant watcher. That it is I, your owner, Alexander Boris de Pfeffel Johnson. Al, I hear you cry. What has compelled you to take up the diarist's pen? Well, 2 weeks ago, I arrived to take up studies at the august and storied Eton College. Eton, it is universally agreed, represents the snow-capped apex of the British educational system. From its halls have emerged Nobel Prize winners, members of the royal family, no fewer than 18 prime ministers. Shall I continue?
Yes, please do.
With that in mind, it has occurred to me that I, young Alex Johnson, must be destined to join the ranks of great men. Hence, I've decided to keep a diary to give future historians something to pore over. I look forward to recording my many adventures and triumphs in these pages. Dear D, we are forced to attend such tedious classes as geography, mathematics, and RE, so I shall have ample opportunity to update you. Not much to report from today. I'm writing this in my bare, narrow room, whose walls are enlivened only by a poster of Farrah Fawcett, which I purchased for the astronomical sum of £2. Spam fritters for lunch again. Every time they serve this, a violent uprising becomes more likely. After lights out, use torch to check my... I'm not sure I can say that word.
Don't then.
Yes. There's a little poem. There was a young scholar named Boris, whose wit outstripped Pliny and Horace. His vocab was vast and greatly surpassed the words within Roger's thesaurus.
Yay, John Colshaw! Better than ever, John. You're on fire. Thank you so much.
Oh, great pleasure. Great to see you.
Goodbye to you and goodbye to Billy and Johnny.
The best of the Chris Evans Breakfast Show with Sky on Virgin Radio.
Armed with no more than a PowerPoint presentation, our next guest will have you rolling in the aisles. His new TV show, Terms and Conditions Apply, is on Dave every Monday at 10 p.m. So, with absolutely no weird caveats snuck into the small print, please welcome the comedy powerhouse, Dave Gorman.
Good morning, Dave.
Good morning.
Welcome. So here we go. Dave Gorman, Terms and Conditions Apply. Tell us all about it.
It's a show where it's still me and my PowerPoint screen, as I used to do on Modern Life is Goodish on Dave, except instead of it just being me, I'm using that kind of material as a way in to open a conversation for three other guests who are sitting there and enjoying it and playing games with it and things. So last night we had Sarah Barron, Phil Wang and Richard Osman answering questions about frequently asked questions on corporate websites and a lovely, I think my favourite bit of the show last night was especially Richard Osman getting worked up about a TV show called Money for Nothing, which is like BBC daytime, very typical sort of thing I go into. It's a show where they go to the tip and they get something that was being thrown away and then they upscale it and then they sell it. And I'm a fan of it, and I knew Richard was, which is why I put it on the show where we had him as a guest. And often they turn things into lamps. So we just played a game, basically lamp or not a lamp, where we would show you the item before they take it and decide whether or not they're going to play it as a lamp. And watching Richard Osman, who I know is a fan of the show, you wouldn't normally have this on a show, right? It's daytime BBC One. It's a weird show that you don't expect many people to have seen. And Richard Osman's looking at a thing going, is it a lamp or not? This is really annoying because I saw this one. I watched this one at the time. Why don't I know what this was? And getting all wet about it. So that's the kind of... That's the feel of it.
So daytime television is for various demographics.
Yeah.
Including the infirm and the not so well off or I don't know. however you would categorise the particular demographics, but also it's for comedians. Well, because comedians don't work in the day; they just watch daytime
from
telly.
Home. I think I am working. Yeah, I also because when I work, I like to have the telly on in the background. I like to hear chitter chatter and I like to hear stuff, and that's what daytime telly is so good for because it's. Because they make hundreds and hundreds of them. Like, Holmes and the Hammer is approaching its 1,000th episode.
Brilliant.
Cash in the Attic has made 586 episodes.
Yep.
You can't do that without being formulaic. And I find those formulas kind of comforting because you don't have to watch the show, but you're watching the show, but you know what's going to happen,
yep.
but you don't know exactly what's going to happen, but you sort of do. And it's really, it's like a warm blanket around you.
Well,
I love those things.
Talking of warm blankets, those daytime shows, they need formula.
Yeah.
Formats, and they need a flock of fleeces because you always seem to get
yeah,
a fleece,
yeah,
don't
yeah.
you?
Absolutely.
Do you have any sort of souvenir fleeces?
I don't have any.
How many celeb versions of the shows have you been on?
I haven't been on any of those. I've been on a lot of. I have a ridiculous record on game shows. I've won 15-1, Pointless and The Chase.
Congratulations!
And I'm defending. I feel like that's like the British equivalent of having an Oscar, a Tony.
Have you been approached to go on those though? You must have done.
I haven't yet. No.
What about Celebrity Storage Wars?
I did one of those.
Yeah. How was that? Was that with Johnny Vegas?
It wasn't. No. Okay. There was a boy band I've never heard of.
Right.
It was me. Was
well, you claim
Sandy.
Never to have heard of them.
I genuinely didn't know who they were. They were lovely boys.
Countdown.
I haven't done Countdown.
See, what have they come calling?
They have. I haven't been available when they've come calling.
Really?
Yeah, I would love to do Countdown.
Okay.
I will do Countdown one day.
So have you done 8 out of 10 Countdown?
I haven't, no.
You haven't done that?
No.
All right, why have you lost your voice?
Because I had a horrible cold last week, and on top of having a horrible cold, you can't cancel shows. So I've been on stage 2 hours a night, sort of shredding
my
voice.
Be careful, you.
On top of that. And basically, I've got 2 nights off now, so hopefully I'll get it back before I do the next show.
Right, what are you doing today and tomorrow, voice-wise?
I'm doing a load of interviews today.
What? Well, that's going to work, isn't it?
I know, but that's not the same as being on stage, where it's a lot more sort of
no, but it's already injured. It's already injured now.
I know. But after I go home tonight, I'm going to be just resting it. Tomorrow, I won't say a word.
Right.
Thursday, I won't say a word until I walk on stage.
That's Rick Astley, who is the man, right?
Yeah.
So when Rick Astley goes on tour, because he's managed by his wife, Lena, and he travels with her in a car from
yeah.
gig to gig, and he only communicates to her, and she's sitting next to him via text when he's on tour. That's how important
yeah, yeah.
this voice thing is. I know you've done it before, by the way.
That's what I did on like the last week of the tour. We did Sheffield, Halifax, Doncaster, Aberystwyth, Yeovil. And on each of those days, I would sit in the van with my tour manager, support act, and people like, and I would not say a word all day. And I would have a voice at the start of the show and I'd trash it by the end of the show.
Right.
And then I'd go back into that cycle for 22 hours of silence, 2 hours of talking.
Well,
silence.
Be careful.
I know.
Okay, on a scale of 1 to 10, how croaky is this? How worried are you about this, for the fragility of your voice right now?
Right now, this is much better than it was yesterday.
Okay.
So I'm getting better.
All
I
right.
sort of feel confident about Thursday.
Well, Dave
now.
Knows best. Dave Gorman, terms and conditions apply. Mondays, 10 p.m. on Dave. With great PowerPoint comes great responsibility. Point is touring again. It must be sold out, then, mustn't it?
It's not all sold out.
Where can people come and see you? Where can they go? I've got all the dates here, but what's not sold out?
Do you know, I don't know which
ones are
the worst.
All right, Worthing. This is from the 24th of October, so day after tomorrow. Worthing, Dorking, Torquay, Reading, Dudley, Scarborough, Middlesbrough, Cambridge, Isle of Wight. Isle of Wight?
Yeah.
Isle of Wight! Love the Isle of Wight. Can you tell? Basingstoke, Cheltenham, Weston-super-Mare, Guildford, Northampton. And then you finish in London at the Royal Festival Hall on the 19th of November. And we've checked, it's a Tuesday. And we might all come and see you if you can get us in.
We will get you in. We'll
yeah.
make a special
Promise?
Effort for it. Absolutely.
Dave, lovely to see you again.
My pleasure. Thank
Look
you for having me.
Look after your voice.
I will do my best.
Okay, well done. Dave Gorman, superstar.
The best of the Chris Evans Breakfast Show with Sky on Virgin Radio.
Thank you so much for listening to this, the podcast of the Virgin Radio Breakfast Show. Don't forget you can subscribe and get it every week from wherever you get your podcast, and you will never miss the weekly roundup of all the best bits from our Virgin Radio Breakfast Show with Sky.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.